The guy in the golf shirt said nothing. So I said, "She took the gun out of her bag and shot herself."
"Just like that?"
"More or less."
"Why?"
"How would I know?"
"Where and when?"
"On the run into the station, whenever that was." The guy processed the information. Suicide by gunshot. The subway was the NYPD's responsibility. The deceleration zone between 41st and 42nd was the 14th Precinct's turf. His case, no question. He nodded, said,
"Okay, please, all of you exit the car and wait on the platform. We'll need names and addresses and statements from you."
Then he keyed his collar microphone and was answered by a loud blast of static. He answered that in turn with a long stream of codes and numbers. I guessed he was calling for paramedics and an ambulance. After that, it would be up to the transportation people to get the car unhooked and cleaned and the schedule back on track. Not difficult, I thought. There was plenty of time before the morning rush hour. We got out into a gathering crowd on the platform. Transport cops, more regular cops arriving, subway workers clustering all around, Grand Central personnel showing up. 5 minutes later, an FDNY paramedic crew clattered down the stairs with a gurney. They came through the barrier and stepped on the train, and the first response cops stepped off. I didn't see what happened after that, because the cops started moving through the crowd, looking around, making ready to find a passenger each and walk them away for further inquiries. The big sergeant came for me. I had answered his questions on the train, therefore he made me first in line. He led me deep into the station and put me in a hot, stale, white-tiled room that could have been part of the transport police facility. He sat me down alone in a wooden chair and asked me for my name. "Jack Reacher," I said. He wrote it down and didn't speak again, just hung around in the doorway and watched me, and waited for a detective to show up, I guessed. Chapter 7. The detective who showed up was a woman, and she came alone. She was wearing pants and a gray short-sleeved shirt. Maybe silk, maybe man-made. Shiny, anyway. It was untucked, and I guessed the tails were hiding her gun and her cuffs and whatever else she was carrying. Inside the shirt, she was small and slim. Above the shirt, she had dark hair tied back and a small oval face. No jewelry, not even a wedding band. She was somewhere in her late 30s, maybe 40. An attractive woman. I liked her immediately. She looked relaxed and friendly. She showed me her gold shield and handed me her business card. It had numbers on it for her office and her cell. It had an NYPD email address. She said the name on it out loud for me. The name was Theresa Lee, with the T and the H pronounced together like the or theme or therapy. Theresa. She wasn't Asian. Maybe the Lee came from an old marriage, or was an Ellis Island version of Lee, L-E-I-G-H, or some other longer and more complicated name. Or maybe she was descended from Robert E. She said,
"Can you tell me exactly what happened?"
She spoke softly, with raised eyebrows, and in a breathy voice, brimming with care and consideration, like her primary concern was my own post-traumatic stress. "Can you tell me? Can you, like, can you bear to relive it?" I smiled, briefly. Midtown South was down to low single-digit homicides per year, and even if she had dealt with all of them by herself since the first day she came on the job, I had still seen many more corpses than she had, by a big multiple. The woman on the train hadn't been the most pleasant of them, but she had been a very long way from the worst. So I told her exactly what had happened, all the way up from Bleecker Street, all the way through the 11-point list, my tentative approach, the fractured conversation, the gun, the suicide. Theresa Lee wanted to talk about the list.
"We have a copy," she said. "It's supposed to be confidential."
"It's been out in the world for 20 years, I said. "Everyone has a copy. It's hardly confidential."
"Where did you see it?"
"In Israel, just after it was written."
"How?"
"So I ran through my resume for her. The abridged version. The U.S. Army, 13 years a military policeman. The elite 110th Investigative Unit. Service all over the world, plus detached duty here and there, as and when ordered. Then the Soviet collapse, the peace dividend, the smaller defense budget, suddenly getting cut loose."
"Officer or enlisted man?"
"Final rank of major."
"And now?"
"I'm retired."
"You're young to be retired."
"I figured I should enjoy it while I can."
"And are you?"
"Never better."
"What were you doing tonight, down there in the village?"
"Music. Those blues clubs on Bleecker."
"And where were you headed on the 6 train?
"I was going to get a room somewhere, or head over to the Port Authority to get a bus."
"To where?"
"Wherever."
"Short visit?"
"The best kind."
"Where do you live?"
"Nowhere. My year is one short visit after another."
"Where's your luggage?"
"I don't have any." Most people ask follow-up questions after that, but Theresa Lee didn't. Instead, her eyes changed focus again, and she said,
"I'm not happy that the list was wrong. I thought it was supposed to be definitive."
She spoke inclusively, cop to cop, as if my old job made a difference to her. "It was only half wrong. The suicide part was right."
"I suppose so. The signs would be the same, I guess. But it was still a false positive."
"Better than a false negative."
"I suppose so," she said again.
I asked, "Do we know who she was?"
"Not yet, but we'll find out. They tell me they found keys and a wallet at the scene. They'll probably be definitive. But what was up with the winter jacket?"
"I have no idea." She went quiet, like she was profoundly disappointed. I said, "These things are always works in progress. Personally, I think we should add a 12th point to the women's list, too. If a woman bomber takes off her headscarf, there's going to be a suntan clue, the same as the men."
"Good point," she said.